LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com.
Here we go, everyone. Ready for another great show. Let's build the energy. Reverend James, hit the music.
Welcome to Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, exploring the magical world around us only on the LMC Radio Network. Have you ever wondered? From temples located on windswept mountain terraces to ancient monolithic structures built in unexpected locations whose patronage has long been since lost to history, the stories of the spiritual earth resound with amazing tales still untold. There are so many fantastic, exciting, and curious things that make up this world we share. Come join us as we explore the spiritual, magical, and wondrous phenomena that enrich our souls and bring color to our days. I am your announcer, Reverend James of FolkContra.com, located in the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina. This week, we welcome our special guest, Clifford Lowe of the Astrological Magical Conference and CliffLowe.com in New York City, bringing us today's topic, the revival of astrological magic. In just a moment, we'll be joined by our host, Reverend Art of FolkContra.com in North Carolina, and our guest, Clifford Lowe. Make sure you're logged into Blog Talk Radio and join in on the discussion via the chat. Now let's catch up with our host, Reverend Art. Take it away.
Thank you, Reverend James, and welcome once again to Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places. Really excited about tonight's show and can't wait to get started. But first, Reverend James, how are things going with you?
Things are well. Just been really working on some of the key websites to the Air Empire here. Most recently working on the CSL website. And if you are a person that, you know, needs some prayer, head on over to the Crystal Silence League at crystalsilenceleague.org and check it out. It's been a long time running, and we have over 100,000 prayers there, and people are praying for people every day.
You know, that really is a fantastic website, and so many folks from AIR and elsewhere participate in Prayers to Light, and just a wonderful program. And I also know you've been working a lot on folk magic with the FolkContra.com and with Folk Faith Ministries, and been doing a lot of programming and coding for those that are non, you know, techie like myself. So what do you got working on there?
I've been working on creating a Tibetan lunar calendar in based off of a Perl script that a wonderful Sangha member has created and shared with everybody. And I'm just adding to that and fleshing it out a bit more, and hopefully going to be able to make that available to everybody to be able to keep up for those of us that are Buddhist or follow a Buddhist path or are interested in Buddhist ceremonies and festivals.
Can't wait for that to roll out, and hopefully soon. All right. So like we were talking about, today we have a wonderful guest with us, a Mr. Clifford Lowe. How are you doing, Clifford?
I'm pretty good, especially considering I've been 4 hours asleep last night. So hopefully I'll do a good job for you today.
I'm sure it'll
Things
be perfectly
are pretty nice.
Fine. So what's been going on in your neck of the woods?
Well, I'll begin at the end. This is all leading up to the Astrological Magic Conference for Labor Day weekend coming up this year, and I'm here to promote that. I've been one of the key popularizers of astrological magic over the past 20 years, and I'm trying to bring together the first real-life conference of astrological magicians and researchers in this ancient tradition, which is in the process of a revival. And I believe that this will be a critical turning point in the evolution of an ancient system of magic, which up until relatively recently was completely forgotten.
Exciting to hear about.
Excellent. Yeah, we have a setup at the Lexington Hotel in New York City. It's a luxury hotel at relatively bargain prices. It's in the middle of everything and has no any drawbacks. There's beautiful suites, an amazing bar, and great lecture halls with the spacious space and beautiful windows on 6th Avenue in Lexington. So I'm hoping that some of these listeners will buy tickets, and I'll be seeing them in September.
Now, is the Astrological Magical Conference, is it an in-person, or does it also have a virtual component?
Well, I very much wanted to focus on in-person. I think that the in-person experience, seeing people face-to-face, is something that I think a lot of us are yearning for after as the pandemic ebbs. And the human personal connection is something which I think is very good for the building of communities. One of the things I'd like to cover towards the end of this is there's been a lot of fractiousness and infighting within the astrological magic community. And I want to bring people together because people on the internet are a lot more likely to have misunderstandings, engage in trolling, and so forth, that you really can't get away with in real life. And the truth is the human connection is something very meaningful, and it's a spiritual connection as well that you just can't quite experience digitally. We will be selling the courses after it's all over at some point, but we're not doing this as a hybrid conference. This is in person.
It sounds wonderful, and personally, I mean, having been to New York City a few times, I kind of have a little bit of an idea of whereabouts you're at with the conference itself. So I'm personally hoping to be able to join you in New York for this first of its kind event, and truly help to in that experience. You really hit a nail on the head with, you know, we've all dealt with the trolls. We've dealt with the backbiting and the seemingly, you know, innocuous statements online that tend to blow things up. I think that's fantastic that you have found what sounds to be the ideal location for just a really stellar event. And I'm definitely supporting you and wishing you all the best in this endeavor. I know you've been putting a lot of work into it, and that work continues.
Thank you. Yeah, I like fancy things, and this is a fancy hotel, but we got a good negotiation down to bring the prices down to a reasonable amount. Midtown Manhattan is going to be a lot more expensive than Poughkeepsie, New York, but I think that people will find this within the range of what they would expect. respect and maybe even a bargain. But you can look at the website. The website is astrologicalmagic.com/conference, and you can see more details there, though the schedule is not posted just yet.
Okay, you know, definitely we'll be following that and making sure I'm up on all of the information as it becomes available. And is it also on like social media? Is there a page where somebody could follow on social media to keep up to date?
Yes, if you go to the website, you'll find that we have TikTok links, Twitter. We got everything. And we have a Facebook group, though they're not really active right now. They will be soon. And that'll probably happen after we post our full schedule once we have everything nailed down. Right now we're in the process of distributing contracts to lecturers, and once that is semi-finalized, we'll be able to post a tentative schedule, and that's when the discussions will really begin.
Outstanding, outstanding. Well, again, definitely keep up the good work with this, and I'm sure it will be just an absolutely amazing event. So let's talk a little bit more about you, Clifford. Like, what all is it that you do? What brought you to this path?
Well, that's a long story. But I will tell you a little bit about me. I'm kind of unique. I've been practicing magic and divination for about 45 years, and I'm in my 50s. I started when I was very, very young. I have studied and practiced about 20 systems of magic. If it's something in print, I've probably studied it and tested it out. I have an occult library of about 7,000 books. The only reason I have a home rather than an apartment is because I need a place to basically put my endless bookcases. I'm a book hoarder, and I'm not ashamed of it at all. I'm an occult theorist and a writer and activist, and sometimes a gun for hire. I'm also a tinkerer. I like to experiment. I grew up an Orthodox Jew, and I learned some Kabbalah at the yeshiva, but you're supposed to wait until you're 40 to actually study the really interesting stuff. And I began to drift and study other material as well. I also trained as a biologist and psychologist back in college, but my love of science has colored my approach towards experimentalism and magic. And after college, I drifted until I realized that while I was good at many things, there were few people who could match me with my skill in magic, and also I would lose interest in practically everything else after a year or two. But magic has been my passion since I was a kid. After college, I discovered the internet. I was a pioneer of internet occultism. I was known for coining the term dark paganism back when I considered myself an unabashed pagan, and that was basically a Wiccan who did not follow the threefold law and engaged in baneful magic to some extent, though I'm not sure about using the word Wiccan and witch and pagan with me these days, but I do the occasional curse. I'm best known today probably for my practice of astrological magic and my extensive commentaries on Picatrix, which was a medieval manual of astrological magic, and that I've created more than 2,000 astrological talismans over the years. I'm also known for lecturing nationally and sharing the videos of my lectures on Grimoire TV on YouTube, and that's probably what I'm known for. My journey began because when I was a kid, I got this crazy idea that I could prove the existence of the afterlife by summoning a demon, which at the time seemed like a really safe idea, which wasn't. And the result was that I ended up having a demonic haunting in my home for decades as the entity or entities eventually started picking off my family members and pets. I began to explore the wider magical community in person, and then through social media, rather the internet and then social media, reaching out to find people who could solve my problem, and discovered that most people in the magical community who call themselves experts really didn't know how to deal with real magic in real life. And so I became the expert that I needed, and eventually I got rid of the demon. Let's see. My attempts to do research had a lot of ancillary effects. I ran the Familiar Spirit BBS for several years, which was one of the biggest bulletin boards in New Jersey. This was the proto-internet. And then I founded Necronomy.com, which is the longest-running occult website, though it's really kind of needs a serious overhaul. Back then in the 90s, I developed two systems of magic, one which was a method of altering energy flow in the body using Kabbalah, perfumes, and body art, and the Church of the Black Sun, which was in the form of apocalyptic paganism, both of which I don't really use anymore. This was during a period of turmoil in the New York occult scene, and I used magic as well as social activism to basically reform it because there were a lot of problematic individuals in that community, which was not being handled by the police, including magic shops which were selling crack and heroin out of the back, pedophiles and cult leaders.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I basically met a fellow at one of these shops, Dr. Leo Luis Martello, who was probably the single most influential figure for integrating gay people into Wicca back in the 70s. He basically was sort of co-opted by the radical fairy movement, but his activism from back in the days, he basically helped teach the rest of us who wanted to reform the scene into how to handle big problems like that without going to the police. And so we were sort of a part of a kind of a, not exactly a vigilante group because we weren't doing anything violent exactly, but we were basically engaging in street activism as we tried to solve these problems. And we kind of failed. These bad people just kept changing addresses and changing names, and we couldn't get rid of them. And I'm the guy who got the smart idea to try to use magic to get rid of them and to prevent further tragedies from occurring. And this forced me to confront the fact that modern methods of magic that I was familiar with, which was, you know, Western esotericism and Wicca, really was not up to snuff for practical ends. And I ended up going through a series of radical experiments where I attempted to do a curse every week, or at least one curse every week, to get these people out. And after about 1,000 curses, finally one of them started to work. And I based a lot of my principles of magic on that experiment, and it turned into a very successful career in magic. And that spell was basically a variation on hoodoo. And while I studied and practiced about 20 different systems, most of what I do today is goes back and forth between hoodoo, which you're more familiar with, and astrological magic, which you're probably not.
Wow, that is definitely an impressive resume. And
thank you.
You know, I've had the pleasure of meeting you and getting to know you through the AIR, the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers, and our combined interest in practicing hoodoo. But this legacy that you've built, it really is just, it's beyond impressive in my estimation. And I'm kind of wondering, it's like where do you go next? Apparently you develop a conference.
Yeah, to go back to the end of the story, there's been such a proliferation of interest in astrological magic now there's been a need for a degree of guardrails, and I basically created this problem without realizing it by popularizing this tradition without copyrighting anything, because I was of the internet generation, which believed that that information wants to be free, and as a result, everybody developed their own spin on astrological magic, most of which right now are kind of crazy. And this is an archaic tradition which had very strict rules originally, and the reinterpretations have gone a little bit wacky, to the point that some years ago, one of the great modern leaders of astrological magic actually psychotic, and there's a person who shall remain also anonymous who's teaching astrological magic in a prominent place, who gets most of his ideas from ayahuasca, which there's nothing actually wrong with in traditions which are congruent with that, but this is a rationalist tradition of magic which does not work with that well. I don't want to be the daddy here, but we really do need to get a bit more serious and not think that every interpretation of the system is equally good. And so what I want to do is basically get people into a room, talk about our experiences frankly, and look through ancient texts to find what they were really trying to say. Because a lot of the literature in this tradition, and this is a tradition which was broken and not practiced for several hundred years, is extremely cryptic and does require hardcore scholarship as well as experimentation to restore. And the restoration of this is one of the big passions of my life. It's just that it's being restored, not exactly in the way that the originators intended. And I think that's to our detriment.
You know, it's actually very it's really great to hear, too, that you're working to bring that, not just the tradition back, but also to have that codified sense of, you know, ethical use and building the community, not just the practice in and of itself. That was one of my biggest draws, actually, to joining AIR, was the code of ethics. Because as you've alluded to, there's, well, for lack of a better way to put it, there's been a lot of unsavory folks over the years that have really made it difficult for those of us in this realm to really overcome the stigmas that they've built. And it's great that you're working on this from yet another front. And I definitely have to give you kudos on that.
Well, it's kind of hilarious because back when I was very young, I was an anarchist. And one of the things I've learned as I've matured is that pure anarchism, when it confronts with reality, tends to break. The fact is people do need some kind of guidance and rules to make them behave well, because anarchism always operates under the assumption that people are fundamentally good. And whether that's true or not, certainly a lot of issues socially get involved and we end up hurting each other unless we have some types of structure. And it's a wild west out there and there are no lawmen. What there are potential leaders who will at least provide a minimum of standards so that nobody hurts themselves or hurt others in an inappropriate way. And that's begun to really concern me when we see so much misinformation being proliferated. Right now, there are maybe 100 makers and sellers of astrological magic talismans, and I can't recommend more than one or two because their methods are so improvisational and based upon their own unique perspective, which depart wildly from the tradition. I don't need to get the false impression that I'm a conservative arch traditional in and of itself, but I do recognize that some modes of spirituality I call them degenerative traditions as opposed to progressive traditions. Progressive traditions believe that magic or mysticism will evolve over time and perfect itself. And then there are generative traditions, which believe that there was a golden era of perfected magic from which every innovation is actually a descent. And this is a tradition which has always been one of the degenerative traditions. And I recognize that because when I grew up an Orthodox Jew, Kabbalah, even when it did have overt innovations and chains of development, it always framed itself as basically being a gift to Adam, from Adam and Eve in the garden, by the angels, showing them mercy, showing them secrets to improve their lives in exile from Eden. And any innovation which was seen as departing from that was always seen as a decay, as a problematic force. And if it actually happened to work, then clearly it was a restoration. It was never an actual innovation, which is, you know, a conceit, but that is how that was framed in the tradition of my birth. And this is a tradition which has a similar attitude, that once upon a time there was a perfected art of astrological magic, and any significant departure from that, we will lose the power, we will lose the purity of the tradition. And in my own practice, I think I try to be a paragon of what I'm trying to do. I have used the recipes of making these talismans as close as possible to what appears in the text, even though it's very hard to do. But I've only created my own unique design for a talisman once in the past 20 years, because I'm trying to follow the spirit of the tradition as well as the basic principles. And that's because it's actually very hard to design a talismanic recipe. And a lot of the rules you basically interpolate by looking at all these lists of timing and materials and inscriptions and basically triangulating what they're really trying to say. It's a very challenging tradition, and to a certain extent, you're meant to learn it through practice. And that's why I've made thousands of talismans, because in addition to experimentation, the process of choosing fortunate times with electional astrology, which is what that is, and implementing the process changes your spirit. It's an initiatory process.
Very interesting. I'm very much kind of in awe of the level of experimentation that you've put into this. You know, a lot of folks, you'll see it on social media. You'll see it, you know, in the proliferation of just random books being published and just throwing things at, it's like throwing things at the wall to see what sticks, and really drilling down to those fundamental principles to keep it traditional, keep it pure. You know, that in and of itself is very respectable. And I find myself, I have to give you kudos on your dedication to this process.
Thank you. I'm just trying to follow the logic of the tradition. The other systems of magic that I work with are often improvisational, highly creative. And this is something which adopting this particular tradition and the ancient mindset that's required for it was fairly a radical departure from everything I had done before. Basically, the turning point in my development was about 20 years ago when I became aware that astrology was actually real, because I didn't really believe in it before, and then that astrological magic could modify fate, which is something that is still a controversial notion in some quarters. But I was also really interested in how, go ahead.
I was just going to say, because I know from my own research in different areas of like esotericism, mysticism, metaphysics, and such, that, you know, a lot of the processes that are described in these texts in and of themselves are very hard to duplicate. And to that end, that you've been able to actually pull these together, that to me, it really shows that understanding of the history and the respect that you give it. Has there been anything that you've particularly found to be extremely challenging in your experimentations and such?
Well, I guess there were two turning points, the first of which is that I had a fear of math, and I didn't want to believe in astrology because that meant me I had to do math. What actually helped me get beyond the fear of math was to realize that calculating elections is sort of like solving a puzzle. You can make it fun. And there was a long period of my life where I had virtually no money and just had nothing to do all day but to basically practice elections the way other people would play video games. And I found it to be very therapeutic and great release of stress, but also could produce power. And one of the unifying forces of all my systems of magic, and what was one of the lures which led me to astrological magic, was an important question, which is that we read about all these legends of magic in ancient books, but hardly anybody can do those things today. Why don't we have flying carpets? Why don't we turn lead into gold? Why don't we conjure fire-breathing dragons or shoot, you know, magic missiles from our fingertips? Or lightning bolts like Gandalf or whatever? If that was ever true, and some people don't think that that's true, why can't we do it today? And that had been an obsession of mine, especially considering that, you know, the second time I tried to summon a demon, I actually did it in front of witnesses, and they actually saw stuff actually happen, not just, you know, in their mind's eye. So I knew that magic was really, really real from very early on, but it was also potentially very dangerous and very unreliable. I wanted to make magic more reliable, and I wanted to have the power without the danger. And I kept looking for it. I was looking for this particular Holy Grail. And one of the things I concluded toward the end of the 90s, after trying hundreds of different things, was that astrology was one of the missing ingredients. Because during the 1700s and 1800s in the Western tradition, astrology got thrown out. And while magical practices were to retain the astrological aspects, which usually were important at one point or another, became nonsensical and confused as people took astrology as something which was superstitious, especially with the discovery of Uranus and the outer planets. The fundamental symmetry of the original seven planets was called into question, and people began to consider the astrological components of magic to be blinds. And it was during that period where magic, at least in the West, became less effective, and nobody seems to have noticed, because magic had been on a slow descent of quality for a few hundred years prior to that for a variety of reasons. And I felt that,
like,
you know...
Like magic light.
Yeah, magic light. I mean, in the late 1800s, for me it was mid-1800s, Eliphas Levi conjectured that magic was will plus imagination. And this basically became common wisdom in all European magical traditions, even though this was not the discovery or a revelation of some ancient knowledge. This was an invention of his. He just decided one day this was the case, said it was ancient knowledge, and nobody questioned him on it. And magic that we see from Wicca, the OTO, all these other traditions, even the Chaos Magicians, it's all based upon the fundamental theory of magic of Eliphas Levi. And it's not wrong, but magic which bases that principle will have different outcomes, which operate in a different series of suppositions and cosmological frameworks. So, I mean, like I said, I've studied 20 different systems of magic approximately, and many of them do operate from that perspective, and they are highly useful. I use Golden Dawn traditional magic. I use things which are adjacent to chaos magic, and I found them to be highly effective. They do different things, and they have different limitations from astrological magic or African magic or even Egyptian magic, which is also a type of African magic, of course, because it's North Africa. When you have magic which bases its cosmology and theory in different ways, it alters what it can do for you. And when you operate within the Aristotelian cosmos, which astrology does, all astrology does, it changes what can be produced. And as I began this process of restoration, I began to notice subtle effects, which became bigger and better as I began to question assumptions. And that was the second big challenge for me. I was the key disciple of Chris Warnock, who runs RenaissanceAstrology.com. And he is a powerful personality. He was the granddaddy of all astrological magic. He was the first person to teach about astrological magic and modernity in public, though his mentor, Robert Zoller, was doing it in private. And he was really the true founder of the revival. But Chris has a tremendous force of personality. And about 10 years into my partnership with him, studying under him, I began to realize that his advocacy of citation and tradition, he didn't always apply strictly to his own work. He just did it more than anybody else. And I said, what would happen if I took Chris's methods and I applied his principles more strictly? Would that produce different effects? And the result was I did get better effects. And we had a divergence of paths, and I made some technical discoveries. And the result is I started making astrological talismans, which did things which most people thought to be impossible. So let me see if I can find my little brag sheet here. I've made astrological talismans.
Go ahead.
No, you go.
Oh, I was just going to say, we actually have a lot of questions coming from the chat and really want to dig into this even deeper and jump headlong into the astrological magic. So why don't we take a pause for a moment for a message from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Sure.
LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include the Lucky Mojo Hooter Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurement Sundays, 3 to 4:30, Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James, Mondays, 4 to 5:30, the Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, Tuesdays, 5 to 6, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, Thursdays, 1 to 2, and Blue Flag Root Radio with Lady Muse, Fridays, 7 to 8, all time specific, at 3 hours for Eastern. All of our shows are available in archives at the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com, where you will see them listed by title and episode and with clickable links. Sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
Provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com, and by the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic conjure practitioners located online at readersandrootworkers.org, and by Hoodoo Psychics, the first psychic line run entirely by Hoodoo practitioners. Receive a reading with a trusted rootworker instantly. Call 1-888-4-HOODOO or visit hoodoopsychics.com, and by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of the Association of Independent Spiritual Churches, located online at crystalsilenceleague.org. Thank you to all of our sponsors. Back to you, Reverend Art.
Thank you, Reverend James. And back into the revival of astrological magic. So before we jump into the questions from the chat, what could you give us a bit of a primer on astrological magic? I know we've kind of dove into it a little bit in the first segment, but one, begin this path.
Well, let's start off with basic principles of astrology. Physicists will tell you that time is just one moment exactly the same as another, except for, you know, the sequence that comes in, the tickings of the second hand on the clock. Astrologers believe that each moment has its own signature, a nearly unique fingerprint, which has peaks and ebbs of power following the movements of the planets. Some people say the planets cause these qualities to change, and some people say that they are simply indicators for it. So that when the planet Venus is in particular positions, it can basically alter reality in favor of love, and in other positions, the opposite of that. Jupiter would govern money and religiosity. Mercury, knowledge, and also ignorance. Mars, bravery and versus cowardice, success in war and defeat. And each of these interacting principles, which we can visualize as lights in the sky, in combination with other features like mundane houses, which are invisible, allow us to track the potential for each moment to alter reality as things unfold. We are most familiar with this in the context of the natal chart, but there's another concept which is different from natal astrology, which is electional astrology. Electional astrology is the choosing of fortunate times, using similar principles to natal astrology, to commence an endeavor so that there's a more fortunate outcome. And there are no moments which are good for everything, but there are moments which are distinctively good for love, good for money, good for warfare, good for fame, and good for health. And if we choose them, we will have better outcomes than we would have otherwise, even though to some extent we are strapped down into the fate that was delineated for us at birth, though everyone tries to escape the bad aspects of that. Astrological magic is a way of taking this principle one step further. Instead of beginning an endeavor for love or money at a particular moment, we basically create an object or alter an object during a very, very specialized time window, and that object is a bottle of time, which allows it to radiate that type of energy whenever we need to tap into it. Most people believe that, but not all, that what we are actually doing is we are drawing a spirit of time into an object and basically giving it a kind of life like a golem. In fact, golems could be thought of as a kind of talisman. Once we have made our talisman, we can interact with that spirit, or we can basically just wear it and watch its effects go. Talismans have a tendency to overwrite the reality in its proximity and make things around it similar to its fundamental nature, so that a talisman of Pisces, the sign of the fish, could probably be created to basically make you a better fisherman. It will draw fish to the talisman and allow you to have a nice dinner. Most people don't want something like that, but everybody would not mind a Venus talisman to have a better sex life or a Jupiter talisman to bring them money. And sometimes it can be used for the nasty stuff. Astrological talismans can be made in a kind of oppositional way to draw misfortune to a location as a way of causing a curse, though that's not as popular. While the revival of astrological magic in the context of talismans is the primary modern tradition, there's also a secondary aspect of the tradition, which are called celestial petitions, which are a little bit closer to the Solomonic tradition in that you're summoning spirits, except that in this instance, you're not summoning demons, but you're summoning a kind of celestial angel to grant wishes. And that's been one of my big operations in the revival. In addition to making lots of different, very expensive talismans, I do celestial petitions to grant wishes for people, and it works really well. That's been a forgotten part of the tradition because, that requires more specialty knowledge and a different class of materials than basically engraving a gemstone ring or casting medallion in gold or silver. Most people want to basically take a piece of jewelryware and have all their dreams come true. Engaging with the spirit world is a little bit more frightening, but I'm not afraid of that because I've tried all kinds of crazy shit, and I found this to be a very productive thing. My heart is all hoodoo. My head is all astrological magic, and together they're a very compatible pair of traditions.
It's very interesting how all of these things do kind of interlace through the different systems. Like in hoodoo, we talk about timing of spells and, what do we do on Friday versus what do we do on Monday or Sunday, different things of that nature. And that's, I have to admit, much of my aversion to astrology basically has come down to math.
It's okay to admit that you hate math. I got into this by way of the world of magic. There are lots of people who get into this by the way of the world of astrology. These are people who are not afraid of math. They love that. I think they're weird. I don't get them at all. I call them space math fetishists. I make fun of my astrologer friends in a certain way because the revelation for me was the thing that is sort of the Brussels sprouts of life, or the Brussels sprouts of magic actually turned out to be transformative for me.
My cousin, just the variation in my family, like my first cousin is very much into math, and to me, repeatedly for my aversions, he actually enjoys taking like actuarial exams just because. My aversion is deep rooted, but I'm very much intrigued. And earlier you mentioned the Picatrix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For someone like myself who would want to get into researching and, kind of building that knowledge base in astrological magic, in addition to the Picatrix, are there any other kind of grimoires that you use? Or actually, and I also understand there's several different versions of the Picatrix, possibly?
Yes. There's the Greer Warnock translation, which is the one I favor, and also Atreille Perico's translation, which is University of Pennsylvania Press. That's a more recent translation, but while most of the text is really clean, a lot of the technical passages are word salad, and I really can't recommend that as a technical manual because the astrological instructions are just unreadable. And you really need that stuff to make the magic go. The Greer Warnock is a little bit choppy and a little bit more of a literal translation from Latin, but most of the technical details of how to do the math, the space math, it's all solid there. This is a tradition which has quite a few permutations. You'll find a lot of this in Cornelius Agrippa's three books of occult philosophy, mostly the middle book, the second book. Agrippa was an interesting fellow. I did a lecture on him fairly recently, where he was kind of an integrationist, where the first book was largely Hellenistic and magic of the natural world. The second book was largely Islamic and celestial magic. And the third book was sort of Christian Kabbalah. And he made the statement that all of these different traditions were one tradition under the hood, and he advocated for their full integration, and then made a point that the purpose of his three books of occult philosophy was that he wanted to claim that not only was magic compatible with Christianity, but that it was essential for Christianity to evolve. And so people have been, you know, having Agrippa's text on their shelves, gathering dust over the years. It's one of those books that everybody owns a copy of, but nobody reads. A lot of material and astrological magic is in that book, if you're willing to thumb through 500 pages to get there. But nobody does. But Agrippa is more approachable in many respects than Bacatrix. Bacatrix is deliberately disorganized. The author frequently sets up puzzles and tests for the reader, scatters information throughout the book, writes things completely out of order. The structure or pattern of Bacatrix is utterly mystifying even to me. A lot of people have been studying Bacatrix. I've made more progress and written more commentaries on it than anybody else that I know of. And I've experimented with it more than anybody else. And yet, large portions of the text are still a mystery to me and will probably be a mystery to everybody for the next 100 years as we begin to decipher the greater mysteries of that text. It claims that you can use this magic to make boats fly through the air, conjure flaming serpents, to blow up cities, heal impossible diseases, and cause the stars to descend to Earth, and so many other strange things that it makes a list of, but never gives you the instructions on how to do that really wild magic. But it says the secrets are in the book, you just have to decipher it. What it does give are the largest collection of recipes for the making of talismans in any part of the literature. That's been the focus for a lot of people, to the point that they ignored the large amount of the text which deals with celestial petitions, which is of equal emphasis in the text. And one of the unique qualities of Bacatrix, in addition to the fact that it is very philosophical and pious in sections, is that it discusses the other side of the tradition, which is the conjuration of celestial spirits, or whether it doesn't really conjure them. You never see them, but you basically get their attention and you ask for your wish gets granted. That is something which only really appears in Bacatrix and not in other parts of the literature. It does not appear in Agrippa.
So interesting. I looked over my shoulder and on my bookshelf to support your point. I have a copy of the Agrippa book. Very thick book, and I have yet to read it, but I will be pulling it out very soon here, pretty much as soon as we get off the air today. I have a growing fascination now that is going to need to be quenched. So questions for you from our chat. Is there a favorite planet that you work with when you're doing your experiments, your activities, or a favorite day to work with that correlates to your practice?
Not really. Each of the planets have their own value. It's like saying, which do you like more, love or money or health or leadership or all these other things which are, to some extent, are all necessary for our lives. And, you know, I like all of these things. I like love. I like money. I like all these things. Why not have all of them? I could make a partial answer by saying that I've been struggling with a question for years. What is the most powerful planet? And it took me a really long time to come to the answer, and the answer is really the sun, because the sun basically defines the seasons. The sun is the brightest of all the stars and planets. If you're going to pick one planet, why not pick the most powerful? On the other hand, my natal chart leans heavily towards Jupiter. That's the greater benefic. It brings money, brings religiosity, can augment the powers of any other planet. So, of course, I'm going to favor the ones that the planet which will do the most for me. So it could be a toss-up between the two, but in reality, all the planets help me out.
That's very interesting. I definitely need to pull my natal chart back out and start really diving in to all of these aspects. So for like the trans Saturnian planets, you know, are they as important as what you call like the ancient seven, the original seven? Do they change any of the harmonics of things?
No. Basically, one of the parts of the revival was an attempt to basically rebuild the predictive accuracy of astrology. So before the revival of astrological magic, people were interested in finding out if ancient magic was ancient astrology was more reliable than modern astrology. And a lot of people believed it was. Olivia Barclay revived horary astrology using the work of William Lilly in the 1700s and 1800s, and Robert Zoller, most prominently, began Project Hindsight and began to inspire astrologers to learn dead languages to translate foundational works of astrology which had not been read since public education stopped forcing Greek and Latin down our throats. And the result of this was that they found that ancient predictive astrology, which wasn't even aware of the outer planets, the trans-Saturnian planets, as you put them, was revelatory. But in the process, Robert Zoller discovered that there were so many references in traditional texts to the use of magic in conjunction with astrology that he began to tinker with it himself, but he didn't want to be laughed at or thought of as, a necromancer or some other terrible thing, or deviant, so he kept it to himself. But one of his students, Chris Warnock, decided that it was the time to reveal ourselves to the public, and he became my mentor. I'm a part of that particular lineage in astrological magic. Now, one thing I wanted to bring up is that the term astrological magic is a really problematic term, but we don't have a better one, because in a certain sense, it's a redundancy. Nearly every type of magic has an astrological component, but we're talking about a very specific tradition of astrological magic. However, if you go into the record and find out what they called it themselves, they called it the science of images. The problem about that is that it's not science by what we would call a science by modern standards, because this is an ancient tradition, long before science as we know it was invented. And images in that particular context is a euphemism for magic. And that has to do with Aristotelian philosophy and what images actually were cosmologically. And they had a life to them, which made them talismanic. So I will call it astrological magic, but it's something pretty darn specific. Because if you study the Golden Dawn, there are the Golden Dawn hexagrams, which are astrological, and they're definitely magical, but they have nothing to do with this at all. At least nothing directly to do with it. Often the Golden Dawn would steal sigils and imagery from Agrippa, not being fully aware of where that stuff all originally came from. So there's a lot of strange cargo culting in the history of magic where people try to rebuild ancient traditions and do a really bad job of it, but invent something new in the process. But a lot of the
kind of brings to mind like the Solomonic seals too.
Absolutely. A Solomonic magic has recreated itself so many times that, it's hard to describe it as it's only one thing. We often see that the Lesser Key of Solomon, the Megaton, has several different books. These were probably written by several different authors and were compiled together later on as an attempt to consolidate something which had been written independently over the centuries and over the map. And that does have some astrological components, but it's not as detailed as the science of images.
This is very the complexity of this. Really, it's very awesome. It's very, you can almost feel the mysteries unlocking a little bit here as we're talking about it. Definitely need to look into this personally more, and probably will be picking your brain here and there as we go.
Sure.
Another question that we had from the chat is, it says, I know you're familiar with and have connected yourself somewhat to Lovecraftian mythos. And, do these factor at all into your astrological magic or the Kabbalistic schemas? Are they like a demonology? What demonology is connected relevantly to astrological magic?
Okay, so there are definitely elements of the Solomonic remarks which have Deconic or other astrological associations, though they're not primary. What it means for me is that when I first heard of Pecatrix in the 90s, long before I had any idea what was in it, it was described to me as the real Necronomicon, the ultimate book of magic which always worked and had maximum power. And being that I was trying to find a magic which worked all the time, this was very intriguing to me, the possibility that there was a supreme magical book out there. And actually, I was involved with a translation effort of Pecatrix with a friend of mine who was, spoke fluent Arabic. The original version of Pecatrix was a book called Gayo Hakim, which means the goal of the sage or the goal of the wizard. And it basically was a manual of magic, which was a compilation of over 220 books in excerpt. And she basically took my money and ran. I never saw the translation. So many years later, when I began to work with Chris Warnock, and I introduced him to my friend John Michael Greer, who was studying Latin for a variety of reasons, and they got together and did the second really good, second Pecatrix translation, and the first one that was really comprehensible. There had been a prior translation from Arabic that was completed by Urvoris Press, but it's kind of incomprehensible. It was a rush job, everyone agrees. But the Latin Pecatrix into English was, if not flawless, was a cut above everything which had come before. And I had no role in the translation, but I'm proud to say that I introduced the two people who actually made it happen. And my dream of seeing what the real Necronomicon looked like finally came true. The only other aspect of it is that when I was working with the type of magic I was doing in the 90s, which I often would characterize as sort of Plutonian magic metaphorically, I had a Lovecraftian aesthetic, but it didn't actually call upon Cthulhu or anything like that. I definitely love horror movie aesthetics or horror novel aesthetics, and that is always involved in some aspects of my magic just because of, you know, what I like. You can basically do magic which is all love and light, and that can turn some people on, but to the extent that I do have personal expressions of aesthetics in my magical practice, I like it spooky.
Now the question from the chat is, how do you feel about the precession of the equinoxes and how this affects a natural configuration of relation to signs and seasons? Does it matter that the signs are shifting minutely through time?
Yes, but being that I mostly focus on talismans, that only impacts me very indirectly. So a few days ago, I made some Orion talismans, and I was reading the recipe of how to make them in an old book from around 1510 AD. And the author says that the constellation Orion is in a particular sign. But you know what? It's not there anymore because of the precession of the equinoxes. So that passage is kind of irrelevant. It's an acknowledgement that over the past 500 years, a lot's changed up there. But for the most part, aside from that kind of navigational aspect, that doesn't influence my interactions with astrological magic. But it does have an impact with other forms of astrology. I do find that when I'm working with constellations and the fixed signs, as the meanings of the constellations and the fixed stars move between signs, their interactions, their traits begin to merge and permutate in a variety of ways. And because that takes a really long time to happen, we're only beginning the process of understanding how that works.
Actually very interesting, because I know every once in a while on social media, the debate pops up about everybody, the sign that everybody believes they are is now wrong, and it's changed completely. And, you know, we have folks that will scream that to the highest mountaintops, and then we have those that say, well, you're kind of full of shit on that.
That's a result of the conflation between constellations and signs, because they use the same names, but they're not the same thing at all. The signs are basically
bringing some clarity
of dividing up
this argument.
Okay. Constellations are jumbles of stars in the heavens. And they are of different sizes and shapes. But the signs are ways of dividing up the sky into 12 equal segments, and each of them have traits. They've never overlapped at any point in history, and people don't always realize that. But they did have some degree of overlap back around the time of the foundation of astrology, and they've drifted quite a bit since then, so they don't match up at all. So when people are basically saying that you're not in the sign anymore because of the precession of equinoxes, they basically have noted that the constellations have moved away from the signs or vice versa. The problem about that is that people didn't use the constellations to determine significant things about their personal destiny, at least since the codification of horoscopic astrology in Alexandria around, I guess, 200 BC.
Interesting. I'm admitting my limited knowledge on astrology. I've seen the arguments. Now I feel a little bit more of an understanding of where that's coming from. And I'm sure a lot of folks have kind of questioned that as well. So I really appreciate you taking a moment to kind of clarify that for myself and for anybody that's listening. One thing I did want to revisit too is you mentioned Levi's theory of magic. Could you go in? What necessarily was Levi's theory of magic?
His name was Alphonse Louis Constant, and he was a former priest. And he believed that if you combined will with imagination, that was really how magic functioned. The problem about that is that we still don't really have a codified notion of what the will is. We already do know what the imagination is. But the idea that this combination could radically overwrite reality is a bit questionable. But it certainly can do things. A lot of our ideas, which came later, like the New Thought movement, which is basically that thoughts are things, or the law of attraction, comes from Eliphas Levi, just watered down a little bit. I need to be cautious about this because I know some of our listeners are advocates for the New Thought interpretation of magic. If it were that easy, then everybody would be billionaires. There's something missing from that. And magic, which has that kind of Eliphas Levian foundation, will have traits and also has positive qualities, like it can radically alter your psychology, which astral magic and other systems of magic really cannot do. On the other hand, if you want to make $1 million, astrological magic is the way to go. That's part of my claim to fame. And one of the things I ended up experimenting with when making talismans is I made a ring of wealth to prove a point to a friend, and I got a mysterious inheritance of a bit over $1 million. And when people on the internet said that was a coincidence, my methods, you know, were trash, I decided to prove them wrong by making a second talisman to win a lawsuit. And lo and behold, the lawsuit did come around, and I won a settlement of a bit over $2 million. And then they shut up. I've been doing things like that.
Coincidence,
you know.
Twice is a pattern.
Yeah. And I've been doing lots of weird things, like I've had some serious medical problems over the years, most of which have been cleared up by my talismans. I've, you know, been able to conjure up storms upon command and direct them to locations, lots of other strange stuff that I've done. And, it's not really what I got into this for, but I have a talisman which prevents mosquito bites, and I live in a drained swamp, and not getting bitten by a mosquito for 10 years may not be a mighty magical effect, but it's a damn useful one.
I think I might need that talisman myself. You know, do you have one for stink bugs? Because we're getting invaded by them, it seems, now that the weather's starting to warm up down here in North Carolina. Kidding
it would probably have to be a different type of talisman, but you can do that. You can use talismans to repel certain types of animals and people. Absolutely.
I think I have found my foundation for learning astrological magic.
Sure. There's a recipe for driving away rats. in a lot of these texts. And they say that it can be modified to drive away whatever you wish. The implication, of course, is that they're talking about people, but they didn't want to actually say that in the text. But you can easily modify the rats be gone type talisman for stink bugs be gone.
That's actually really interesting. And, you know, I've kind of looked into, you know, like Native American talismans and, you know, talismans of different belief systems and systems of magic, and come across much along the lines from the astrological aspect of it. And it really feels to be, and I know Reverend James made a comment about Chinese astrology in the chat, that it really does feel like it's that lost component to really to build that wall, that to build that foundation for doing the really grand magic.
Well, the idea in astrological magic, which is sort of the assumption, is if you can calculate a chart which can cause a reality effect, you can basically force that chart into being through calculation and then cause that to come into reality. So, for example, if there's a natal chart where a person is born with, I don't know, unbelievable strength, you can create a talisman with a similar configuration and wear that to endow that type of strength. What you can internalize mathematically can also be promoted in the future through that method. I'm not sure about explaining
so
that.
We can, so with
there,
natal charts,
DNA
a lot of people are familiar with those.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes you'll get a reading, you'll have somebody draw up your chart, and you'll find out the negative things. So there, we can effectively, through the talismanic magic of astrology, remediate and ameliorate those negative influences. Is that accurate?
That's a really dicey question, because a lot of people got into astrological magic at various points because they were interested in natal chart remediation. Remediation is basically to say that you have a planet in a bad place and it's causing you mischief. What do you do about that? The problem about it is that while in Indian astrology there are methods for remediating natal afflictions, there are no methods that appear in the texts of the Western tradition, at least after the Hellenistic era. The idea is that you have your fate and you have to deal with it, or at least that we were able to find. When I first got involved with Chris Warnock, he prescribed talismans of planets based upon a person's afflictions. So when I first bought talismans off of Chris, he said, there's a particular planet in your natal chart which could use a bit of help. Use these. And instead of them helping me, at first they did nothing for about 2 years, and then for 2 years they just completely caused chaos in that area of life. And then after another 2 years, it all settled down and sort of improved a bit. But what Chris began to observe was that a lot of people who were prescribed talismans as cures for natal problems had really bad experiences. And then when he translated the Bekatrix with John Michael Greer, he found a passage which said, you will have the best success with the planet which is your natal ruler, your strongest planet, which is sort of the opposite rationale from what he was trying to do. And he basically stopped prescribing talismans based upon your natal afflictions and began to pivot towards prescribing them based upon your planetary strengths. For a little while, he was trying to use fixed star talismans as a way of remediating natal afflictions until that turned out to be not very productive. I basically said that, you know, too. That was a result of a discussion we had, and I promoted that in some videos on the internet, and that took off in some quarters. But, you know, 20 years down the road, we have not found any references in the canonical material to how do you fix a natal chart using talismans or magic. And that's probably saying something. However, one of the things that I'm at fault for is I gave away all my information for free, copyright free, for the past 20 years, and certain people in the astrological community, which I really was not as in touch with as the magical community, took some of my ideas and Chris Warnock's, presented them as their own, and dumbed it down. And the result of that is that there's been a huge growth of interest in astrological magic amongst astrologers, but it's simplified, and the result of it is a lot of misinformation is out there. And the reason why it's grown so much is that there's a tremendous demand for remediation information in the world of astrology, because if you are a traditionalist, if you believe in traditional astrology and you believe that there are definitively bad placements of planets in your chart, what do you do about it? The only solution that's been offered, one of the very few solutions which have been offered, is the use of talismans, and nobody wants to hear that you can't use talismans for that purpose. Because, you know, astrologers are astrology clients too, and they want to have a better destiny. And astrological magic can give you a better destiny, but there's very little evidence that it can be used as a targeted way to fix particular planets. So the issue of remediation through talismans is a very contentious issue. I would say
there seems to be a logic to that, though, you know, to mm-hmm. speak to your sure. strengths versus, mm-hmm. you know, trying to bandage over or absolutely remove a part of your person, a part of your of who you are. You know, it's, to me, it would seem like that's there for a reason, to really focus and build on your strengths and enhance that. To me, that seems logical.
You know, you can argue a lot of different ways about that. I tend to think of basically pivoting into a planet which is weak in your chart as trying to run on broken legs, and that won't heal you properly. That will make things worse. But I do believe there are methods of remediation which are indirect. I believe that hinted at in ancient texts are systems of reciprocity between the planets, so that if there's a special relationship between one planet and another, and you have one planet in your natal chart which is really bad, but the one that has a relationship with is in a better state, the strong planet can help out the weak one. And there are several different patterns by which this can be accomplished that do appear in the literature, but nobody really has explained why and how that works. I think that can be done with talismans as well as a variety of other methods. So I think remediation is possible. I just don't think that it's directly addressed by the literature. And I do think that, you know, one of the things that we are seeing is a lot of people who are undereducated in astrological magic setting up shop, selling talismans, and I bet you a lot of the clients who are expecting these as cure-alls are just basically worsening their lives and then going back to buying more talismans and more talismans as they basically play whack-a-mole with the stars until eventually they have everything covered. And I don't think that's the most efficient way to approach things.
I just got this image in my head as you were talking about just kind of these individuals walking down the street in their trench coats and, you know, opening the coat and say, hey, you want to buy a talisman?
You have that kind of situation going on right now where people who are either motivated by greed or with the best of intentions, really believe that, you know, in a year you can pick up all you need to know about astrological magic, make your talismans, and then have a great side hustle. And this is not what I intended. I didn't want to particularly let this genie out of the bottle, where the most important thing that I've expressed at a certain point was that John Michael Greer, who was the co-translator of the contract, said that this was medieval rocket science. John Michael is a friend of mine. He's one of the smartest people in the world of magic. He's written more books than any other person alive on magic. And he, who translated Pitatrix predominantly, couldn't wrap his head around the complexity of it all. And I made it my goal to basically master it as best as possible, and I did make a lot of progress. But, you know, he found it daunting. It took me, 10 years to really just get a sense of the scope of the tradition, studying it for 10 years just for the scope. And here I am 20 years in, and compared to the masters of this tradition hundreds of years ago, I'm an ignoramus. I'm a novice. I know how far I have to go. I am not conjuring flaming serpents. I'm not, transporting myself across the world in the blink of an eye. I'm not doing all these amazing stuff, but what I have done is pretty impressive by comparing it and grading on a curve with other systems of magic. You know, talismans which make you millions of dollars multiple times is nothing to scoff at. That's pretty cool.
Very cool.
But I also know that, I mean, it is cool. But there's so much further to go because, you know, to a person who's outside the realm of magic, who doesn't understand what the standards are and what the comparisons are, they might just shrug their shoulders and say it's still a coincidence. If, you know, I conjure up a fire-breathing dragon or something like that, that's a lot harder to argue away. And that's really maybe not literally the case, but that's the type of radical manifestation that those of us who are trying to renew interest in magic and validate our passion are looking for, the big boom, as I call it. Something which will shock the populace out of the modern, the dominant paradigm.
Yeah, the grandiosity, I think a lot of folks have in their minds is to, you know, they're really going to reinvent that whole system, the whole, you know, history and everything else. And, you know, it's, you know, in so many ways, the ancients were well ahead of us, whether you want to chalk that up to indoctrination of the populace today or lack of a drive on education and open-mindedness of spiritual metaphysical practices and such. One thing I'm personally curious about too, because I'm familiar with Western astrology and from what I'm gathering is predominantly a lot of the focus on that you've had thus far on astrological magic has been based on the Western system. You did mention like Vedic astrology briefly.
Mm-hmm.
Are there like in Reverend James is prolific with Chinese astrology. You know, are there interactions between these different systems in men's or does each system kind of have its own system, I guess, lack of a better way to put it?
I was actually having a discussion earlier on my Facebook group called Stellar Sorcery with a woman who was kind of baffled by the fact that I denied that there was an Indian source to talismans. And the reason this discussion was coming about was that Picatrix claims to be a compilation of over 200 works of astrological magic from other sources, and the Latin version claims that a few sections are derived from Indian sources. The problem is that Picatrix is a liar. The author of Picatrix made false attributions to both individuals and cultures, which have nothing to do with their actual origin point. So we really don't know. Whether they derive from Indian culture or not, though some of it probably does. The use of talismans in the Indian context really fell out of favor many hundreds of years ago, and I don't know of anybody practicing that today. But it probably did have some origin points there. I'm sure that there are types of astrological talismans or amulets or charms or something like that in Chinese astrology, but I don't know very much about it. But the talismans, which come mostly from Picatrix and were later adapted by Agrippa and was distributed from, you know, Arabic sources into Western culture at various points, they have some very unique traits. And there's a quality of aliveness to astrological magic talismans, which are distinct from the ones that you see in other cultures. So I wear lots of magical rings. These are talismanic rings. And the rings will interact with me in ways that are unnatural and bizarre. So that if a talismanic ring wants to communicate with me, sometimes it will break my knuckle. Sometimes it will exude something like an acid to burn my skin. And, you know, they can't communicate telepathically with me, but they can communicate very physically and usually in not pleasant ways. But if I put up my psychic senses or do a divination, I can communicate with them in that way, which is much less destructive. But you will not
that
see a
definitely
a,
would get
a
my
Chinese
attention.
Amulet. Yeah. I just learned to deal with it because it's done so much good for me. The fact that you get an itch or burn or a broken bone occasionally is not too bad for me. I sort of think of it as elective surgery. It kind of hurts, but overall, it's something you want.
That's a valid way of looking at it. You know, we're coming quickly up to the end of the show. Before we went to break, you had mentioned you were pulling out your brag list, and I wanted to give you a chance to revisit that, because I know from conversations over the months that you've done quite a lot, and I really want you to have an opportunity to share that with folks. You know, it as an inspiration, if and more to them.
Oh, I have a lot of big brags to brag about, but let's see. Can I find this list? Success, gold rush, feats. All right. This is mostly the astrological magic feats. I told you about Wealth Talisman, which got me Mysterious Inheritance, the Lawsuit Talisman, which got me a few million dollars settlement. I got made a variety of Venus Talismans, which made my love life in my 40s way better than it was in my 20s. I've been using a variety of talismans to reverse aging, and that, the results of that one are pretty spectacular. So few people believe me when I say that I'm in my 50s. That's pretty good. I said that I've basically cured a number of very serious illnesses, or at least reversed them significantly using talismans. I can't recommend that because that's practicing medicine without a license and other people. But my own subjective experience is that there's an actual reason why medicine and this tradition of magic do have linkages historically. One of the popularizers of this tradition was Marsilio Ficino, who was the doctor to the Medicis. And he advised using talismans for health. And the result of that is that the popularization of astrological magic in Europe in the 1400s and 1500s often was distributed through medicine. But that's not, you know, how it was originally. But it certainly can do that. It can alter your physiology. Tell you about the mosquito talisman. I have a talisman which allows me to control weather and winds, and I used that for about 14 years to blow away storms when I flew across the country in February every year, and I was never late in 14 years. My flights were never delayed even 5 minutes. 14 years. Eventually, it stopped that. That's a really good track record considering, you know, how much problems there can be when you fly in winter across the country.
And I can attest to February being the worst month. Is that's being born in February, there's always a blizzard on my birthday.
Yeah, indeed. And I've made a lot of experimental talismans because this is one of the things that I depart from with regards to my practice with Chris is that I've basically painted outside the lines one too many times, and I've seen how dangerous it can be if you really break the rules. And I wanted to create talismans which, you know, fudged the edges a little bit, and there were some ambiguities in text, and it created a two sets of talismans in close sequence, which caused my roof to leak and all kinds of serious problems in my home. I knew they were dangerous, but I also thought they were so effective as causing, you know, cursing myself. I wanted to get them the hell out of my home, but I didn't want to have them destroyed because, you know, I occasionally run into, you know, bad people, and having a really powerful curse talisman is a handy thing to have around. So I made an arrangement with my friend who lives in California. It occurred to me that California is the furthest place from me because I'm in New Jersey. And I asked him to bury them in a public park next to a dead tree, which he could basically retrieve later on if I ever needed them. And he disobeyed me. He took the talismans and just kept them on his work desk at home and said he's a powerful chaos magician. He's going to just neutralize their power and they won't hurt him or cause any problems. Don't worry, Cliff, I'll be fine. And a few years later, he called me up and was crying, Cliff, give me permission to throw away these talismans. I can't bury them in the woods. It's completely destroyed my life. I'm developing severe disabilities. I'm going crazy. My wife is about to leave me. I'm sick all the time. And, you know, I told him, yeah, I mean, I had no idea this was going on. Throw them into the bay. And he did. And I have not been able to fix the injuries that the talismans did to him. That's not really a really cool brag, but the fact is, this stuff is really, really real. You can't argue it away. This is a lost science more than a fantasy. And no matter what your intentions, if you do the calculations wrong, if you do things exactly wrong, you'll get yourself into a whole lot of hot water, and your intentions do not matter. Because I believe a lot of people are looking for specific things, or a variety of things within astrological magic, and are painting outside the lines themselves, they may not realize that there's an association between their non-canonical talismans and the misfortunes they're experiencing, which is why I'm trying to be the leader that I have been in a different way, and trying to bring things back to the fundamentals and basically creating a new sense of what's acceptable practice for the safety of novices. And that's why I wanted to do the conference, so that we basically, if we are going to be heretics from the orthodoxy of astrological magic, let's be more intelligent heretics. Let's understand the orthodoxy better and basically develop a new consensus of what this is all supposed to be about. Because right now, it's not just the Wild West out there. Nobody can even agree what astrological magic is, mostly because they haven't done the reading. And they haven't done the reading because they haven't had good teachers who are providing clarity, because it is a very difficult topic to master without guidance and mentorship.
Actually, one thing I was going to ask, because you mentioned about you know, not following the rules and things of that. Like, is there kind of like a set of rules that, or are you meaning more towards the mechanics of the practice itself?
It's mostly the mechanics. If you want to learn how to do this, Chris Warnock has some wonderful courses at renaissanceastrology.com. I will be setting up my own courses at some point over the next few years. People have been badgering me to do it forever, but I didn't want to compete with Chris because he doesn't seem to mind. And I'll be doing my own take on things. I'm also in the process of writing a book, which is sort of a manual of astrological magic, which would be integrated into the course. And I think that this is a tradition which really does favor experience. I would not trust a person studying a very complex tradition who'd only had a few months of experience. I mean, this is a topic which is more complex than brain surgery. I'm really not kidding about that. Would you want a brain surgeon to work on you who had 40 years of experience, or would you want somebody who just, you know, graduated med school last year? You probably go for the person with the more experience. And I think that the understanding of the sheer complexity of this tradition has not really been communicated adequately. And that's why I think that we need better watering holes of information, why I manage Stellar Sorcery on Facebook, why I want to create this conference, so that good information can combat and out-yell bad information in spite of its cacophony.
And again, the conference will be Labor Day weekend at the Lexington Hotel in New York City.
Yes. Yes, go to astrologicalmagic.com.
Go ahead.
astrologicalmagic.com/conference.
Well, that is all the time that we have for tonight. I do want to thank you for joining us, Clifford.
Thank you.
Thank you, Reverend Art, and thank you, Clifford Lowe, at the Astrological Magical Conference in New York City, for being our guest this week. We invite you to join us next week when our special guest from the Aroma G's Botanica is Papa G of AromaGregory.com in Nashville, Tennessee, discussing how to choose a spiritual worker. We've come to the end of the episode of Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and on the LMC Radio Network. You can find Reverend Art at FolkConjure.com, on the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com, on readersandrootworkers.com, and on Hoodoo Psychic Thursdays and Fridays from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and Saturdays and Sundays from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm your announcer, Reverend James, joining you from FolkConjure.com in North Carolina. Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the shows are available in archive via mysticsmages.com/radio show and on the Lucky Mojo Forum. From all of us at Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, thank you for being here. And be sure to follow us at Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places on Facebook and at Mystics, Mages, Magical Places on Instagram for updates.
and news. We'll be back next week at the same time. Come sit a spell, wink, wink, relax, and enjoy the show. We've only just begun. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.
Thank you, we are the Game Clippers, and definitely hope to have you back on the show.